Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The first enslaved Africans arrived over 400 years ago in colonial Virginia in 1619. African slaves were introduced in New Spain earlier still in the late 16th century, when disease killed off the indigenous population. Mexico had, by the 19th century, essentially abolished slavery. It was a stance that threatened slavery in the U.S., more so because slaves in the U.S. were escaping to find refuge in Mexico. Much is written about the flight of black slaves to the north. Less is known about the thousands of slaves who fled south of the border, which for a time included the Mexican state of Texas y Coahuila, which includes much of what's now Texas. And even less is known about the connection between abolition in Mexico and the U.S. Civil War. Dr. Alice Baumgartner is an assistant professor of history at the University of Southern California and the author of South to Freedom, Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to the Civil War. She says the narrative of runaway slaves to Mexico was one with which she was unfamiliar.
Well, I, like many listeners perhaps, had never heard of enslaved people escaping to Mexico until the summer of 2012, when I was doing research on a different topic in state and local and national archives in Mexico. And I just kept coming across, really by accident, these documents about enslaved people escaping to Mexico and their former enslavers coming to Mexico and trying to kidnap them. And then their Mexican neighbors helping to protect them against these kidnappers. And at the time I was doing a master's degree in Latin American studies, I thought I was going to be a Latin American historian, but I found myself just so fascinated by this question of why enslaved people were escaping to Mexico. I had never learned about Mexico's anti-slavery laws or its place in global debates about slavery and freedom. And more importantly, why was it that ordinary Mexican citizens were sometimes risking their lives to help protect these freedom seekers? And those questions I thought were going to be easy to answer, and they just kept getting more and more complicated to the point where I went and got a PhD focused on U.S. history in order to better understand this larger dynamic, this larger story about why enslaved people were escaping to the South and what lives they found there and why the Mexican government and Mexican citizens were helping to protect them.
Well, you're not the only one who's not familiar with this narrative of black slaves fleeing to Mexico. You know, Mexico history is not something that's taught in U.S. schools. So you really get into sort of the history of Mexico and the history of the United States in telling this narrative, because one has to do with the other, and they both have a lot to do with slavery.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something that I didn't expect to find. I thought I was going to be telling a really local story about the experience of enslaved people in the border region. But over the course of my research, I was reading the Congressional Globe, which is the transcript of debates of Congress in the 19th century. And I remember I was on the Amtrak to Philadelphia to give a talk at Penn. And I remember reading Senator Thomas Hart Benton, who was from Missouri, a slave state. And he read Mexico's laws in the original Spanish on the floor of the Senate to prove that Mexico had actually abolished slavery. And that was another moment where I just remember thinking, well, why does he care about what the laws of Mexico were? And the short answer is that the U.S. war with Mexico, which was fought between 1846 and 1848 and ended with the conquest of what is now the American Southwest, that was actually the first time in U.S. history that the United States had acquired territory where slavery was explicitly abolished by law. And that created all sorts of problems constitutionally for politicians about whether the United States Congress could reestablish slavery in those territories, which were, after all, to the west of the southern slaveholding states. And that problem, what do you do when you've incorporated, conquered free territory that helped to jumpstart the coming of the Civil War in the United States?
Well, slavery was not always uncommon in Mexico. We could backtrack through time now. And when New Spain was established in Mexico in the late 16th century, slavery was common. And you actually point out in your book, and I thought this was fascinating, Mexico City had the largest African population of any city in the Americas by the year 1570. That's way before U.S. independence.
Absolutely. That's a part of the story that I think is surprising for a lot of listeners, that Mexico has this long history and entanglement with slavery, that between 1580 and 1640, New Spain, as Mexico was then known, imported more enslaved Africans than any other colony in the Americas except Brazil. So there was this huge and important influx of enslaved people to the colony. And that in Mexico or New Spain at the time, the labor systems, for a variety of reasons that historians debate, but that the labor system gradually started to shift away from African slavery and towards other forms of labor, like wage labor, debt peonage, et cetera. And so because of that decline in the slave population, historians really haven't paid that much attention to abolition in Mexico. The assumption has long been that the decline of slavery basically guaranteed its end. But the story of Mexican abolition is actually much more complicated than we previously understand. So I feel like historians are just professional killjoys. You think something is simple and we're there to ruin it for you. It's actually much more complicated.
Dr. Alice Baumgartner is an assistant professor of history at the University of Southern California and is the author of South to Freedom, Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to the Civil War. When we come back, there was a real push and pull between the U.S. and Mexico when it came to slavery in the 19th century.
The Mexican government really was committed to not letting slavery expand. They were willing to accept where it existed, but they tried unsuccessfully to stop, for instance, Anglo-American colonists who were coming to Texas.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Mexico is a country that was staunchly anti-slavery, but its history with slavery was complicated. Mexican lawmakers proposed laws that allowed slaves in Mexico to buy their freedom or to emancipate children born to slave mothers once they turned 14, or banned the introduction of new slaves, or allowed slavery to exist under the guise of lifelong indentured contracts. The views on slavery seemed to change with every new leader in Mexico's tumultuous political history. The event that really cemented Mexico's firm anti-slavery stance was the Texas Revolution. It was almost a retaliatory, metaphorical middle finger gesture to the U.S. It's easy to only focus on the history of slavery in the U.S., and it's also easy to forget how slavery was referenced in nearly every important law and land acquisition in the growing nation, like the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 or the Missouri Compromise of 1820. And it's not well known how intertwined slavery in the U.S. was with abolition in Mexico, and how they ultimately collided in the U.S. Civil War. Dr. Alice Baumgartner untangles that complicated web in her book, South to Freedom, Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to the Civil War. She talks to Fronteras about her process in connecting the dots.
It was so hard to figure out how to explain what happened in a way that was coherent. The easiest ways I've found to explain it is actually to compare what was going on in Mexico and the United States. That for both countries, in the wake of their independence movements, there is a surge of anti-slavery sentiment, this feeling that slavery was incompatible with Republican institutions and the principles of liberty and equality upon which both nations were founded. And in Mexico, as in the United States, there was a lot of anti-slavery legislation on the state level. In Mexico, the majority of states either abolished slavery or passed gradual emancipation laws in the same way that the northern states of the United States abolished slavery or passed gradual emancipation laws. And in the southern states, they eased what were known as manumission laws, which made it difficult for enslavers to free their enslaved people. So surge of anti-slavery sentiment at the state level. But there's this problem in both Mexico and the United States where both of their constitutions protect property. And enslaved people in both countries are technically defined as property. And for the United States, as you were mentioning, it's a huge country, as is Mexico, with a frontier that's very far from the centers of power. And those frontiers, which included places like Louisiana, which had a large enslaved population from the moment that it was incorporated into the United States, the fear was that if the United States tried to abolish or interfere with slavery in those regions, that the slaveholders of those regions would revolt against the United States and it would implode the country. And that was one of the reasons why slavery was allowed to exist across the southern territories of the United States. And Mexico faced the same sort of problem. And it was the same reason why they were sort of hemming and hawing about these laws. But in contrast to the United States, the Mexican government really was committed to not letting slavery expand. They were willing to accept where it existed, but they tried unsuccessfully to stop, for instance, Anglo-American colonists who were coming to Texas. They tried to stop them from bringing their enslaved people by banning the importation of enslaved people. And there were different factions that were trying to find loopholes, but the Mexican government really tried to close those loopholes. But like the United States during this time, it was hard to enforce those laws. So there are a lot of similar problems with slavery in both of these republics, but that the two countries seem to solve them in slightly different ways. That the United States government seemed to accept the idea that any interference with slavery was a violation of property rights, whereas the Mexican government seemed to think that if you banned the importation of enslaved people, if you freed enslaved people or the children of enslaved people, that that wasn't an interference of property rights. And even though it would not end slavery for a generation or two, that that was nonetheless putting slavery on a path to extinction that was not taking place in the territories of the United States.
Well, you brought up Texas, so let's talk about Texas, because you've probably, I don't know, being in California, I don't know how far this controversy over the book Forget the Alamo, if that's reached mm-hmm. you or not. But here in Texas, it is a powder keg of controversy, because, of course, the version of the Alamo that all of us are fed is Mexico bad, freedom fighters at the Alamo, Alamo defenders died. Texas eventually won independence and we broke away and Texas is free. But, you know, that in a nutshell is not really what happened. And you talked about it right now where Anglos are coming in to Texas, part of Mexico still at the time, and they are bringing their slaves with them and they're trying to get around that whole slavery not allowed thing by writing up these indentured contracts that last for decades and decades and decades. And so, again, you point out in your book, which came out before this whole Forget the Alamo controversy, you actually do detail in this book how central slavery was to Texas independence.
Yes, absolutely. I'm trying to think of the easiest way to explain how central slavery was to those Anglo-American colonists in Texas. Those laws that promised to free enslaved people within a generation or two were just as concerning as immediate abolition. As you mentioned, they tried to work around those laws by forcing enslaved people to sign indenture contracts that would last for their entire lifetimes. And it's interesting when people talk about those indenture contracts, they often say things like the Mexican government couldn't enforce its laws against the importation of enslaved people. When that's true, but what's also true is that those Anglo-American colonists coming to Texas were breaking Mexico's laws. And according to Mexico's laws against the importation of enslaved people, illegally imported slaves would be free from the moment they set foot on Mexican soil. And that fact was deeply concerning to those slaveholders who had used that loophole to bring enslaved people to Mexico, because it called into question their ability to hold people as property. The protection that they were able to do this in large part because of Mexico's federal system, much like the United States, Mexico was divided into states who had a lot of control over their local politics. And at that time, Texas was part of a state known as Coahuila y Texas. And the enslavers in Texas were pretty able to do what they wanted in Eastern Texas in those colonies. And one of the reasons why Antonio López de Santa Anna's coup and abrogation of Mexico's Federalist Constitution was so appalling to those slaveholders in Texas was because it was undermining their independence within their state to ignore and to violate Mexico's laws. And it's interesting how the debates over the Civil War, was it about states' rights or slavery, really mirror the debates that are going on now about the Texas Revolution. Was it about liberty and federalism, or was it about slavery? And I think in both instances, you have to ask, why was federalism so important? Why were states' rights so important? In Texas, as well as in the Confederate States, the answer in large part has to do with the fact that slavery was under threat if Mexico became a centralist republic.
Dr. Alice Baumgartner is an assistant professor of history at the University of Southern California and is the author of South to Freedom, Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to the Civil War. Baumgartner joins us next week to continue this conversation. Here's a preview.
One of the big debates, as I think all Texans know, about the Alamo had to do with, why would you defend the Alamo? Why not, as Sam Houston wanted, return and concentrate your troops in eastern Texas? And the defenders of the Alamo wanted to defend it in part because of the belief that if they could stop Santa Anna's army from getting close to those plantations in eastern Texas, that they would avoid the Mexican government promising freedom to enslaved people and thus cause a slave revolt in Texas, that there was this desire to keep this Mexican army away from those plantation centers with large populations of enslaved people. So abolitionists and Texas revolutionaries alike recognized that slavery was part of this conflict. And that became a liability for the Republic of Texas after winning its independence, because the revolution itself racked up a huge amount of debt. And one of the solutions to the financial problems that the Republic of Texas was experiencing almost from the beginning was to annex itself to the United States. The problem was that these abolitionists in the North were saying, we can't condone this revolution that was in favor of slavery. And people in England were saying the same thing, that all of the English were eager to get that cotton that was coming from the Republic of Texas. They were wary of recognizing the independence of Texas because England fashioned itself as an anti-slavery nation, and they didn't feel comfortable recognizing a revolution that they too were saying was a revolution in favor of slavery. And so that became a liability. We see a surge of rhetoric coming from the Republic of Texas that is really refashioning the revolution as one in favor of liberty.
Tune in next week. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.